Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest for this morning is New York Times, USA Today, and Los Angeles Times best-selling author of A Dog's Purpose, Bruce Cameron. His latest novel, titled Emery's Gift, is another story about the enduring bond between humans and animals in a wonderful family relationship setting. Bruce and I will be discussing about his life's journey and Emery's Gift. Although Bruce is not able to be with us live this morning, I have a recorded interview for everyone to listen to. Please enjoy this wonderful interview with Bruce Cameron. Good morning, Bruce. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, Johnny. Thanks for having me on your show.
Wonderful. I'm excited to have you on the show with me this morning. Emery's Gift is a wonderful read. It touches the heart. So congratulations.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I really like hearing that. Yeah, a lot of people have really warmed up to Emery's Gift as a sort of a, it's a book that is a page-turner, but it's also, as you say, it's got strong characters and a deep message.
Very much so. Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Okay. Well, my father was he's a retired physician, and my mother was a sports writer. I grew up in a suburban neighborhood in Kansas City, but we had a cabin in the north woods of Michigan where we would spend a few weeks every summer. And I lived in Michigan after I went to college. I worked for General Motors for many years. I was an executive with General Motors, and then I became other things in life. Went to work for a software company and did things like that. But through it all, I have always been a writer. I was really working day jobs in order to try to get my writing career going, which really didn't happen. I mean, I sold my first short story when I was 16 years old, and then didn't sell any fiction for decades after that. Not that I didn't try. I wrote I wrote novel after novel, but I couldn't get them sold. And then I sold a book, became a humor columnist for the Denver Rocky Mountain News, and I wrote a column called 8 Simple Rules for Dating My Teenage Daughter, and it became hugely popular. It's still all over the internet to this day. And as a result of that column, I was able to sell a book called 8 Simple Rules for Dating My Teenage Daughter, and that became a TV show on ABC starring John Ritter, who eventually changed his name to 8 Simple Rules. And it still runs. It's about 30 countries running right now. So that was great fun. That brought me out to Los Angeles. I was living in Colorado at the time. I moved out to Los Angeles, got involved with the showbiz side of it. It's a lot of hard work. It's not as glamorous for some people as it is for others, but I've really enjoyed working on it, and was finally able to sell a book called A Dog's Purpose back in July of 2010. The hardcover came out, and it has been on the New York Times best-selling list now for an accumulated 40 weeks. So A Dog's Purpose is just going great guns, and everybody's really happy with it. And when I when we had the sense that book was going to come out, the publisher called me and said, you know, I think A Dog's Purpose is going to do pretty well. What do you want to do next? And I started sketching out a story of a boy and a bear, and they sort of interrupted me and said, fine, we'll buy it. They really wanted to tie me into the next book. So that was great because it meant that I could write whatever I wanted to, and that's how Emery's Gift came to be.
Fantastic. I want to go back to your college years. In reading your bio, you majored in beer, right, at Westminster College?
Yeah, I was social chairman of my fraternity. That was nearly my undoing. It certainly didn't help my GPA any.
And what's this deal about being known as a chief knowledge officer?
Well, that was a I know it's a crazy sounding title, but I when I was an entrepreneur involved in a startup company that attempted to form an organization of career coaches. And my title, I was probably the chief operating officer, but we decided to call me the chief knowledge officer. I don't know why. I had a very forward-thinking CEO.
There you go. I understand that. That's fascinating. What's interesting about you is that you had always wanted to write since you were a child.
Yeah. In fact, I don't remember ever wanting to do anything else. I was just always a writer. I mean, I remember drawing pictures that would be book covers before I was really of the age I couldn't type yet. I'd write longhand short stories. I remember sitting down to write what I was intending to be a novel when I was in fourth grade, and I wrote 28 pages longhand, which for a fourth grader is probably pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Eventually ran out of steam because it's hard work to write, and it's hard work to write longhand. But I couldn't see myself doing anything else. That's all I've ever wanted to do.
It was interesting because you wrote about growing up in a small town in Chicago on that first particular novel that you were talking about. What is the inspiration behind it?
Yeah, I wrote about growing up in a small town in Chicago because I didn't know what Chicago was. I used as inspiration it was the story of a boy who was in fourth grade who had an evil sister, and that described my life as I saw it pretty much at the time. It was sort of a memoir.
Do you use your storytelling abilities as an escape in some ways? Because since you're creative, and then you kind of, you know how people say, let's put it down on paper, and that's a form of an expression. Do you feel like you're doing that?
No, you know what? It's not the telling that's the escape, but I will say that I have the worst attention span of anybody I've ever met. I can't listen to anything. I just am always in my head. There have always been these stories, these little, it's like movies playing in my head all the time. I have trouble tracking a conversation that I'm having with somebody. I will just lose track and I'll be thinking of something else. So the escape happens so almost unwillingly. Even when I want to pay attention, I'm really usually just picturing something happening, and since stories are just constantly leaping into my mind.
One of the fascinating things is that you have written so many work prior to having the first book published. Whatever happened to all these books? I mean, I know that some of them have been changed to, you know, to books now, but do you just...
Well, no, that's the myth, isn't it? It's the idea that you sell one book and then you can go back and sell all the other ones that you couldn't.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen in my case. What happened, Johnny, was that I was trying to write a book to sell to the market. I was trying to... I thought the market wanted thrillers or international spy novels, and that's what I was writing. And when I finally decided, if book number 9, I decided that I was just going to write a book for myself, meaning I was not going to try to sell it. I wasn't going to have an eye on the market and say, well, this is what people are buying now. I was just going to write a book that appealed to me. And I wrote this huge book. It's 750 pages long. And it was funny. I didn't realize it was going to be funny. I didn't know that was my voice. So... that changed my career, but now it means I can't go back and salvage any of those darker, scarier books that I wrote because they're not funny.
Right. But this is more of you, though, I would think, in real life.
Yeah, I think it is more. But the Emery's Gift is centered around the life of a 13-year-old boy in 1974, and that really, you know, that time and that age, that really resonates for me. Certainly, Charlie's challenges are that he's not big, he's not tough. I mean, it's not a school where being tough is necessarily part of it. But I wanted to write from what my perspective was the real junior high school experience.
Right.
Because I've read so many and seen so many coming of age stories, and it's always about. You know, there's always these gangs of toughs, and there's these, you know, and I have something similar to that in Emery's Gift, but it feels much more accurate to me to what my real experience was. mm-hmm. much less organized, much more confused. The boys, you know, sort of pushing and shoving their way toward manhood without really understanding, you know, what they were trying to accomplish. And I also, you know, so many stories center around how boys blossom sexually around that
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's a real innocence that happens before that, where there's a longing. I mean, boys, at least the way this was true for me, mm-hmm. just yearning to have a girlfriend, just yearning, you know, finding myself swooning with one crush after another.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of how my life was put together at that time. And I wanted to write about that and not about the heady rush of the lust that can surge through boys as they get a little older. That I wanted to write a book about a time more innocent. And that is what that's what came together for me with Emery's Gift.
Well, you did a great job with the relationship with Charlie and Beth.
Yeah, Beth is a real character, isn't she? I mean, I think that, you know, I was always sort of struck by how more self-confident girls seemed, but that's really only perception. Mm-hmm. From their standpoint, they were just as awkward, but, you know, it's like the girls had the goods, so to speak. They
mm-hmm.
they were what I wanted to be around. I wanted to decode them and figure them out, and of course, I'm still working on that one.
How about the rest of the characters? Were those something that you observe, or is something that you truly experience it yourself?
No, Charlie. There's a lot of me in Charlie. There's a lot mm-hmm. of me in his attempt to diffuse situations with humor.
Mm-hmm.
The other characters in the book, and there's this father who, you know, Charlie's mother has died, and the father has retreated behind a hard shell of grief and is just not communicating with his son the way a father should, especially a father of a boy who's lost his mother. That character and the other characters in the book, they're not mm-hmm. as drawn from people I know as is Charlie. They're more constructs of mine, more
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
characters that came to life for me in my imagination and on the paper.
Emery certainly is something like, you know, that invincible friend that people tend to have, you know, the alter ego, that someone that sort of reflects back to you kind of thing. I mean, how does that develop from that standpoint of view?
Right. Well, you know, and of course, I don't want to give away too much of the book, but
sure,
Emery
yes.
comes to represent far more than he seems at first blush. I mean, when
right.
we first encounter Emery, he's a grizzly bear, and the encounter where we meet Emery is quite dramatic and it's life-threatening,
mm-hmm.
and there are a lot of things happen at once. That first encounter is pretty normal, and it seems like something that could happen to any
mm-hmm.
year-old boy wandering in the woods where there are bears. But then from that point on, everything that happens with the bear becomes more and more interesting, doesn't it? It becomes
yeah.
more. It draws you into wondering, is Charlie pulling our leg a little bit here? Is this all really happening, or has Charlie gone off the rails a little bit? And there certainly is room. I mean, this is one of those books that you can interpret, and that's
right.
always been my goal, is to write a book where you say, well, I know that this is what it says happened, but what if this happened, or what does this mean? I want people to close the book and say, gee, I need to talk to somebody about this book.
You're right, because depending on which angle you're coming from, it gives you a different sort of interpretation of the situation. I mean, I like the idea about you talking about growing up from a perspective of the 13-year-old boy, the things that, you know, we go through at that age in terms of age of innocence and, of course, being the meek ones.
Yeah.
Bullied on in some ways and so forth. And then, of course, the tragedy of losing the mom and those kind of things, because those are real life, real situations. That's what I like about it, because your book speaks about that.
Yeah, that's what Emery's Gift is supposed to be, a very real feeling story. But in the end, the question that gets posed in the novel, did it really happen, has got to start boiling up in your head at some point.
How about the other books that you've written compared to all the other books that you've written? Of course, A Dog's Purpose is no doubt you a pet lover. How is that compared to Emery's? I mean, the big switch, so to speak.
Emery's Gift was a little risky for me. It uses a word that uses the word God and asks questions about God, and I think that immediately will get you in trouble with book reviewers and a small but vocal segment of the book reading, book buying public that doesn't want to have to consider questions like that. So I was able to take an artistic risk because I knew A Dog's Purpose was coming out, and A Dog's Purpose. I knew A Dog's Purpose was going to be a hit because it's written from the perspective of a dog.
Right.
There are other books that do that, but this is a real dog. This is a dog that reacts to the world the way a dog would.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not really a book out there that has captured that before. So I knew that I was going to be able to sell more books beyond A Dog's Purpose, and so that gave me this opportunity to do something with Emery's Gift that I might not have permission to do again.
Do you enjoy playing the specific characters in all the different stories that you write?
Yeah, there's something really fun about creating a person and living in that world. The final period was just put in the last draft of my next novel, the one that comes out in May of next year. And I have created characters in that book that I have really come to fall in love with. And there's something sad about hitting send and transmitting a novel to the publisher and know that now this whole process of having spent the last year living with these characters and feeling them and feeling their reactions to things, now that's over, and I can certainly pick up the book and read it again, but it's not the same as being able to imagine things happening with these characters that I've created. Some scenes that I imagine that never make it into the book, that's not the same.
Well, you did a fantastic job in terms of putting the feeling into the book, and I thought that was exceptional.
Yeah. Thank you.
And having said that, like, say, it's just very different because it's surreal, and whether it's a tall tale or not, it doesn't matter, because for that moment in time, you're in there, you're engaging with the characters, and in some ways you want to be in the book.
Yeah, right.
Wonderful. Coming back to A Dog's Purpose, my understanding is that it is in the works to be a movie, correct?
That's exactly right. DreamWorks hired me and also hired my screenwriting partner, Catherine Michon, write the screenplay. We turned it in. They liked the screenplay. We're now waiting for them to set the date when the movie will start filming. And that's a complex process that no one really seems to understand how it happens. You're going to hear something on a specific day, and then you don't hear anything on that day. So we're all just sort of waiting. But yeah, the plans are to make a movie of it and have it come out sometime next year.
Fantastic! How excited are you about this?
Oh, I think it'll be. It's always. I love that side of the business. I love features. I love movies, and it will be a thrill to see A Dog's Purpose on the screen. And it's a different art too. It's a collaborative art involving so many different people. You've got the directors and everybody involved. I don't expect that it'll turn out exactly in the movie the way it turned out for me in the book, and that's okay because what I want to see is, well, what does it look like when you take this story and you put it in a different medium.
Right. Very true. What are some of the favorite book-to-movie adaptations that you like?
You know, I have to say, I think one of the best is L.A. Confidential, because if you read that book, I believe it's by James Ellroy, the book is so complex and dense, and how in the world they managed to turn that into a movie that runs 2 hours. I don't know. I am full of admiration for that adaptation. That's probably my favorite. I think, and of course, To Kill a Mockingbird, classic, and it is a classic example of how if you just follow the blueprint laid out by a novel, that you'll strike gold. That you really have to, you really should just take a look at making that magic work.
Coming back to what we talked about as far as Emery's Gift is concerned, your book speaks about family, faith, trust, and unconditional love. How important are all those topics to you?
Well, you know, you're right. Emery's Gift has family in it, and it's a family under deep stress that has to figure out a way to cope with and get beyond this huge loss where the mother has died. Families can be stressful. They can be very, but they're so important to us. They are the fabric of our lives. They're woven into our very characters. So, you know, clearly I care about issues like that. Faith and trust. Well, faith and trust sort of describes your relationship with a dog pretty well. And a dog's it's all full of faith and trust. Unconditional love is that we toss that term out there all the time without really considering what it means. You know, love entails risk, and unconditional love to me means willing to take the risk of loving. And that in Emery's Gift, there's a lot of risk around loving. Charlie needs to love his father, but there's a huge risk that what is this cold front coming off of his father will break Charlie's heart. And then there's this girl, Beth, that he encounters, and there's this real risk that he undertakes to try to pursue her and get his first girlfriend out of the deal, and he's really scared of that. And then, of course, there's no greater risk than the risk with Emery, and that's where the word faith really comes. That is where the word faith can really play, is because in Emery's Gift, the relationship with the bear requires a great deal of faith and trust. This is a top of the food chain predator that really take care of you if you're not careful, and the idea that you would just abandon your sense of self-preservation and get close to a grizzly bear is an ultimate test of faith and friendship.
It's a captivating book for sure, and certainly a great book for young adults. Did you write it specifically for a specific age group?
Well, you know, both A Dog's Purpose and Emery's Gift are adult books, meaning they're not sold in the YA section. But it's always been my policy, if you will, as a newspaper columnist, to write stuff that you could show your grandmother. And so I steer away from the darker stuff, and I'm not interested in using a lot of profanity, unless, you know, if I have to use a profane word, it's because it's needed for a scene, but it's not ever gratuitously thrown in there.
Right.
I don't think there's any entertainment value in that. So it turns out A Dog's Purpose is really appealing to parents who are looking for books for their children to read. I get emails every day from parents who say A Dog's Purpose is my daughter's or son's new favorite book, and they're reading it right now. And I've had children as young as 7 years old read the book and tell me that they really loved it. And that's a great feeling, because in today's world, to get a child to sit still to read an entire novel is a real work. Emery's Gift, I think, skews a little older. I wouldn't hand it to a 7 year old, but I do think that a young adult could read it. I think that if you're the age of Charlie, if you're 13 years old, you'll really identify with it. And if you've ever been the age of Charlie, you'll really identify with it. So I wrote it for everybody, I think, and I'm really pleased that schools are starting to write me and say that Emery's Gift is a great book for the classroom, because there are so many ways you can interpret what's going on, and it really stretches the imagination of the children who are reading it.
Right. What I'm getting out of it also is that it helps during that tough time of communication between the generations and so forth, and it gives an outlet, an opportunity to kind of read, and like you were saying, hey, I can relate to this.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, a lot of children have had their parents get divorced, and they have watched as their parents start dating other people, and it's very upsetting to Charlie when his father, you know, a year or more has gone by since the death of the mother, and Charlie's father is starting to date, and this is really distressing to Charlie, who just feels utterly betrayed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just an example of the sort of thing that happens in Emery's Gift that I think a lot of children can identify with.
See, yeah, you were addressing all the social issues that sort of, like I say, it blended very, very well because, and it's, the way you've done it is very subtle. And that's the beauty of it.
Well, you try to be subtle. I mean, if you bang people over the head with something, they're not going to appreciate it.
That's the way you wrote it, and the message I think is wonderful because it helps in communication. I was in a meeting yesterday with a mother who's got a teenage daughter. You know, it's like, wow, I need certain books now to get across a message to her, you know?
Yeah, I know.
Or likewise, the other way around, so to speak. You know, how do I communicate with my parents?
Right. Yeah, well, my daughter communicated with her parents by slamming her bedroom door, so she could try that.
So that's wonderful. What would you like your readers to gain from reading Emery's Gift?
You know, what I really want them to do is look for the bigger messages. It's it's an entertaining read. I mean, it's a page-turner. A lot of people can just read the storyline and be very satisfied. But if you want to take the time, they're not exactly hidden messages, but they're bigger messages. There are things that are said in there that I've put in there so that people would think. Mm-hmm. And it's an allegorical tale, so you can compare it to other larger, more profound questions of faith and our relationship to God. And I think that you should take the time to ponder that. And I'll note as well that the first couple of men who read Emery's Gifts were atheists, and they really liked the book. So it's not as if it, though the word God is in there, I don't think anybody would think of this as being a preachy book.
Right.
It's a book that Emery's Gift is a novel for everybody.
I look at it from a relationship standpoint of view, understanding, realizing that there's a connection, and coming back again about the family and the unconditional love. To me, that's the biggest thing that I got out of it. From a standpoint of, you know, having the opportunity to really sit down, be in the present moment, and look around and see the beauty that's all around you. Things you don't understand, that's okay. In time, it would just reveal itself. And then the opportunity to, hey, take chances. Things will work out.
Yeah, that was very well said, Johnny.
It's a very different take. And I think that way, when the word God is in there, it's, like you say, it's something that is needed to put in as any other word that you would use, because if it resonates to certain people, then that's fine. That's how it, you know, that's how it works. Where can someone go to buy your book, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
Well, there's some fun stuff going on. If anybody who's on Facebook can go to our Facebook fan page, and we have 95,000 fans on Of a Dog's Purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just a lot of stuff going on there. If you're a dog lover, you can post pictures of your dog and tell stories. And there are people who are consoling each other with the loss of a dog, and they're celebrating the arrival of a new dog. And all that stuff's going on. And that's on Facebook. And then I've got a website, adogspurpose.com. And that's really fun for dog lovers as well, because you can upload pictures of your dog and enter them in the Dog of the Week contest. And the winner of the Dog of the Week contest every week gets a free copy of A Dog's Purpose. So we've been doing that for more than a year, and it's just been a lot of fun. And people vote, and it's just a blast. And there's other stuff about dogs and some dog videos and dog pictures and things on that page as well. And then I've got BruceCameron.com, my website, and that's where I have my bio and pictures of me and stuff going on, updates. There's really, not a place anywhere on those to buy the book from me. I'm not a bookseller, but A Dog's Purpose is on the New York Times bestseller list, so you pretty much can find it just about anywhere that you can buy a book. It's in trade paperback right now, and you can find it online, Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com. Emery's Gifts is pretty much exclusively in bookstores and on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Wonderful. How has writing the various novels, because you have a different twist in each one, impacted you personally?
Well, you know, the emotional impact is mm-hmm. that writing A Dog's Purpose made me realize that that I needed to get another dog. I had lost my dog and thought I wasn't ready for a new one, but now I've got this little puppy, Tucker, and he just woke up and came over and jumped on me, so he wants to know what I'm doing. He doesn't understand phone calls. And, you know, Emery's Gift really made me think about my own spiritual path and how do I, you know, how do I feel about the profound things that are around me in the world? Because one of the chief messages about Emery's Gift is that really important, profound things can be happening in our lives, and yet we, as human beings, tend to be focused on very mundane things. We're focused on what's in front of us instead of taking a look at the big picture. And that's a real message of, and that's ultimately Emery's Gift to Charlie, is to sort of point that out to him. And the thing is that I find that I get caught in the same thing. I'm getting, you know, I'll get focused on problems that are right in front of me, and I'll spend days and days without ever once considering anything larger and more important in life. The issues that you identified, family, mm-hmm. faith, trust, and unconditional love.
And we talk about life's journey. So looking back for you, I mean, this is quite fascinating because you started writing at a very young age, in fourth grade. Were there things that when you look back right now that all those aha moments and perhaps, you know, like, gee, I shouldn't have done that?
Well, I think, there's a couple things that I wish I had done differently. Mm-hmm. One of them is that it was always my dream to be a novelist, and yet I set out to earn a middle-class living and to raise a family, and certainly all of that was turned out to be great things for me. Mm-hmm. But it meant that my writing was always something I did as a hobby, as a sideline, and yet it's very time consuming. So I spent most of my life working really hard, and if I had to do it all over again, I would have said, take the time, don't run out, get married, you know, buy a car and a house and start getting in debt, you know, don't do that, but instead get a day job and write, you know, just concentrate on your writing and you'll get there, because if that's your dream, you won't know if you would ever do it unless you try it. And then the other thing was, you know, I tried to write to the market. I tried to figure out mm-hmm. what the market would want and write to that, and it was never successful. And when I finally just gave up and wrote what I wanted, that's when success started to happen for me. So that's my advice, is, you know, stay true to your own voice and write what you want. Don't try to come up with the next big blockbuster bestseller, because chances are you're not going to hit this. You're not going to get there.
Don't be trendy, in other words.
Yeah, there's really no way to gaze at the bestseller list and say, oh, I could write a book. You know, the Help has been on the New York Times bestseller list mm-hmm. As number mm-hmm. one for, like, ever.
Right.
There's no way to write that book. I mean, you could come up with a similar book, and maybe people would run out and buy it, but I doubt it. And more to the point, you'd be exploiting something instead of writing something true to your heart. If there's something true to your heart, that's what you should write, and it doesn't matter if it's not popular.
Very interesting. How about in your spiritual journey? What has changed?
Well, I think ultimately what has changed for me is that I'm starting to see just how much my choices have led to my situations, and mm-hmm. that you know, you can blame God. you can feel that the universe is against you. But that is sort of a ridiculous stance to take. No matter what challenges you are facing, and they may be profound, they may be life altering challenges, but they're your challenges to to it's your life, and so what I'm trying to do with my life is just make sure that I'm cognizant of that all the time, that I cannot shake my fist at the sky and say, why did this happen to me? It's not how it works.
How about some of the greatest hits rather than the misses?
I don't even know what you mean, the greatest hits
yeah.
of my life.
Yeah.
It's absolutely true that that during the course of my career, I developed an obsession, if you will, with being a novelist. I mean, it really was an ambition and an obsession are separate by the slimmest of margins. And it's got to do with the fact that you can want something so bad that you become blinded to what it's turned you into. Mm-hmm. I really do think that I was working too hard and spending too much time in pursuit of this, but that's what I really wanted. Having attained exactly what I wanted, which is to see my name on the New York Times bestseller list and to, you know, have a movie in the works and have all
right.
that happen, I'm not going to issue the standard proclamation that it wasn't that great. It's great. It is to have worked for something my whole life and finally have accomplished it is a wonderful feeling. And I think that there is a way in which I would coach anybody to, with moderation, stay dedicated, with focus and with perspective. Don't deviate, but rather be true to yourself and true to your ambitions, and you will be rewarded because it's a great feeling when you finally pull it together.
Did you have a mentor that helped you in your writings in some ways?
You know, not really. I never really have had any success in dealing with other people about writing. You know, I took creative writing classes in college, and it was fine. I enjoyed them, and I had a great professor, but I really ultimately realized that I was serious about writing, that I was planning to make that my profession. So there was a way in which I wasn't actually communicating that well with the other students in the class, because as far as they were concerned, this was just kind of a fun class. And for me, it was really important.
Interesting. So what's next for you?
Well, I do have a book coming out in May. I think it'll be about the middle of May of next year. It's called A Dog's Journey, and it is the sequel to A Dog's Purpose. And we'll pick up the life of the dog precisely where we left off in A Dog's Purpose. And I've got, after that, I've got another book that I've sold and not yet written nor do I really have a title for it or really understand exactly what the storyline is, but that's next big project for me to write. And, of course, we're going to see, hopefully any day now, we'll get the word that we've got a green light on our movie project, A Dog's Purpose, and we want to see how that goes, and that will take up some time. I don't know when A Dog's Purpose will be in the theaters, but they're still talking that they might be able to get it done and in the theaters by next November, which would be just fantastic.
That would be wonderful.
And, yeah, it really would be great. And then we're doing, my screenwriting partner and I, who's also my wife, we're doing an independent movie next year, first part of the year. So we were just out doing location scout for that yesterday, and we're trying to get ready to go into pre-production.
That's wonderful. I want to come back to the fact that you had sold a book, if I hear you correctly. You sold a book, but you have no idea what it is, nor the title and so forth, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I have some ideas. I sketched out an idea to, it was a pitch
yeah.
for an idea. I'm not willing to share it yet.
Oh, no, I understand that. I understand it. I was just going to tease you because you're a humorous guy, and I was just going to say, you know, like, everyone liked that kind of deal, man.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it really was. I don't have it yet. I mean, I don't know what the book is yet precisely. I just have an idea of the theme and everything, but the characters and everything haven't yet gelled. But I only just finished the last novel. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to give myself a little bit of a break before I start the next one, you know, at least a weekend or something.
Do you feel like all your writing is going to include lots of humor in some ways?
Yeah, I don't think I'll ever go back to being grim. I love writing funny stuff. It's hard to do.
Yeah.
It's actually harder to write something that makes people chuckle than to make something cry. And so the fact that over time I have honed that skill, I want to use it. I mean, it's really, it's sort of when I'm writing at the peak of my game, when I can bring someone to laugh and cry in the same book.
What's interesting is that you have this group of people that just love to read humor and fun and laugh, and then you have this group of people on the other side that just love the horror and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm definitely not into horror. I mean, anybody with a bottle of ketchup thinks that he can write a horror movie, but I stay away from all of that. I don't even like to watch it. I mean, I don't like scary movies that much. I'm a comedy kind of guy.
I could tell from just your voice from our conversation. I mean, that's kind of cool because it's really fun. Because that's what life is, you know. You have to take certain things light because if you don't, it really weighs you down.
I think that that's exactly right. I mean, I think that nearly anything can be funny if you work on it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes laughing at something is the absolute best way to make sure that it doesn't defeat us. And so some of our worst problems might be better laughed at than anything, even though you feel like you might be being insensitive. But there's a degree to which laughter is definitely the best medicine.
How's your children taking to your writing?
Well, you know, they absolutely despise the fact that I write this newspaper column because for so many years, especially when they were younger, I wrote about them. I mean, they were my best source of entertainment. I could just, I joked that I could just open my office door and listen to them arguing with each other and I'd have a column because some of the stuff they said was just, if you put it on paper and looked at it, it's just hilarious. That's what, they've never really appreciated it. They do love my fiction. They've all read it and loved it. My older daughter runs a rescue in Denver, a dog and cat and even rescues some other animals as well. So she's a real animal lover. She's really guided me in terms of my understanding of the lives of dogs, really helped me with a dog's purpose, and she gave me my dog Tucker. She rescued him.
Mm-hmm.
Said, "Dad, I've got a really special animal for you," and I said, "All right, it's time."
Mm-hmm.
So that's what my older child is up to, and she appreciates that a dog's purpose has really brought so many people to the point of understanding sort of the plight of dogs in our time. You know, here's a species that we developed. I mean, we bred dogs to want to be with us and to serve us, and then sometimes we treat them so negligently, and it's really hard to understand why some people do that to their animals. But the bottom line is that dog's purpose, we've done a lot of work for animal charities. We've been able to support them and advertise them and have benefits for them and donate books to them and things like that. And that's been a great part of this whole journey as well.
Fantastic. Are any of the children picking up on your writing?
No, fortunately. None of them are interested in that.
Interesting. Any final thoughts on Emery's Gift?
Well, just that, I think that Emery's Gift, for all the talk we've done about what a great book it is in terms of the allegorical nature of it and the messages involved, it is written to be a page-turner. I'm still drawn to writing those books that you can't put down. And I've had a lot of people tell me that when they picked up Emery's Gift, they sat down to read it, and they found themselves reading the whole thing straight through. And that's the greatest thing that an author can hear from his readers, is that they loved it so much that they couldn't put it down. So that's my final thought, is that if you're looking for a good read, a fun read, and what we've been talking about with the messages and memories gift doesn't sound appealing to you, consider picking it up just from the standpoint that it's a rousing good story.
I believe it makes a wonderful gift, especially for the upcoming holidays.
Yeah, you know what? Men are finding it really compelling, I guess, because it's about a boy and about a boy struggling to become a man. I'm getting a lot of feedback from male readers.
Right.
Not that A Dog's Purpose isn't popular with men. I mean, we've got lots of men on the fan page. But it's clear that women sort of, the emotional side of A Dog's Purpose really appeals to women. When it comes to Emery's Gift, I'm hearing that men are really thrilled with it. So that's fun. And so if you're looking for a gift for the man in your life, Emery's Gift, I highly recommend it.
I would too.
That's great, John.
By the way, we're coming close to the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
Yeah, you know what I try to do? I often have explained to people that the reason why I picked the topic of dogs in A Dog's Purpose is because there's one thing that this creature brings into life, and that is the utter joy of being alive. And when you see a dog, you can put a dog in really, really kind of crummy circumstances, and the dog is always happy. The dog, you can lock yourself in a closet for 4 hours with a dog and then open the closet door, and he'll be happy to be in there, and he'll be happy to be out. You know, dogs see a door as an opportunity, whichever way it's opening. And I just want to make sure that I always live my life like the dogs, that I always try to be optimistic, and that I look for the good things in life, and that everything is fun if you let it be. So don't be dragged into the human side of the equation. You may be holding on to the leash, but on the other end of that leash is someone who's enjoying life, and you should try to emulate that. So my formula for life, my recipe for living, if you will, is to take those elements that the dog brings of joy and faith and trust and bring them into your own life, and you'll really have a much better experience.
That's awesome. That's a wonderful recipe for living. One of the things you mentioned just now also is the fact that you and your older daughter really connected when it comes to bringing the dog into y'all's life in so many ways. So that helps in the communication aspects of being in the family.
Yeah, I think that you have probably a lot more in common with your family members than you realize. So often we focus on what is the difference between us and our family members because, well, that's more interesting to talk about, and it's more vexing, and it's probably all the difficulties in families arise from the fact that even though we were born and raised in similar circumstances, we nonetheless have different views of life, and we're frustrated that our family members don't share the same views. But turn it around and take a look at all the things you have in common, and focus on that as being a great way to build a bridge to the people who are in your family. And with my daughter, she was a star athlete in high school. I was never a star athlete. I was never really good at anything, and she was an amazing volleyball player, went on to play on a national team that won the national tournament 1 year. So she is she's full of that kind of competitive spirit, and I supported that, but where we really have connected much more has to do with her work with the animals. I so admire who would spend so much of her time and treasure on finding animals who are, through no fault of their own, condemned, and finding instead that they can be rehabilitated and given a new leash on life, no pun intended, but rather given an opportunity for a great life that they would not have had otherwise.
See, you're a very compassionate person.
Well, I think everybody would agree with that statement. I mean, I think we all want to be compassionate. I don't think I'm perfect, though. I mean, I'm not sitting here saying that I have always lived my life by the recipe for life that I've given. That's just my goal. And my goal is to become more compassionate. And certainly animals deserve our compassion because we've taken over and we've decided for them how they will live and where they will live and under what circumstances they will die. That that implies a great responsibility. We need to make sure, in my opinion, that we do the right thing with that responsibility. In Emery's Gift, the bear obviously comes under great threat, great danger. And the reason for the book is set in 1974 is because in 1974 it was still legal to hunt grizzly bears. They were not protected by the Endangered Species Act for another year. So we had this odd attitude about bears. I mean, they actually celebrated when they shot the last golden bear in California, wiped out the species.
Well,
there's a real responsibility we have, and I think I'm not a radical environmentalist who insists that we can't do anything that might endanger any animal, because I think there's give and take among all animals on the planet. We all have to make room for each other. But I do think that we need to be very careful of the responsibility that we've been given to take care of the animals in our care. We very specifically have to be careful with our pets, because we basically removed from them the ability to take care of themselves. We bred that out of them. So now they are dependent on us like children, and we have a paternal responsibility.
Very true. Bruce, thank you again for the great recipe for living that you have shared with us. It was just a wonderful touch with the flavor of having the dog's life blended into that wonderful recipe, and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. All the best to you.
Oh, thank you very much, Johnny.
Thank you. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. I hope you have enjoyed the recorded interview with Bruce Cameron. Please join me in 3 weeks on Tuesday, November 29th. My guest will be Dr. Don McManus. Dr. McManus is the co-author of a new book titled How's Your Family Really Doing? 10 Keys to a Happy, Loving Family. The book provides parents with the knowledge and resources to create happier, healthier, and more loving families for a lifetime. Dr. McManus and I will be discussing about his life's passion of helping parents and families and his new book, which he co-authored with his wife, Deborah. For additional information about this show, future shows, and to receive a free recipe for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening. Have a great week. Bye-bye.